I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about books. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Okay, this is, if you're interested in recommendations for good reads, you're in the right place. On the book show, the studio regulars tell you what we're reading, and we ask you to call in about a book that you've enjoyed. The number is 203-776-9677. That's 203-776-WNPR. Book club members, we love to know what you've been reading. This is how word gets spread on very good books. 203-776-WNPR. Our regulars are here. Roxanne Cody of R.J. Julia Booksellers in Madison, Connecticut. Rose Quiello, adjunct professor at Quinnipiac University. And Lee Jacobus, who is a former literature professor at UConn and editor of the college textbook, A World of Ideas. Hey, everybody. Roxanne, what do you have?
I want to talk about a book called The Interestings by Meg Wolitzer. And Meg's been around for a long time, written lots of books. This book has been a bigger book, much, much bigger book, and has been on the bestseller list. And I think it strikes a chord for this reason. It starts at a summer camp in the early 70s about a group of kids that become very close. It then follows them over an arc of time, but not chronological. So all of that sounds like blah, 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 blah. You know, who cares, right? A group of kids in a camp in their life, whatever. But in fact, what Meg Wolitzer does is an absolutely fantastic job of reminding us how people's intersections, the intersection of their expectations and real life and what you thought would happen and what you thought relationships would look like and how they really turn out to be better, worse. You become so attached to these characters. She has such an eye to the nuance of how people evolve that you just are utterly immersed. I mean, it's the kind of book where you could have hours and hours of conversations about their lives, your life, your expectations. I just think she did.
Are book clubs reading it, Roxanne?
Does
that sound
like
a perfect book?
And it just came
club
out in paper. One of the reasons I brought it up is it's out in paper. This is the quintessential perfect book club book. It's called The Interestings by Meg Wolitzer.
Wonderful. Okay, here's our number, 203-776-9677. If you have a book that you have enjoyed, in any category, we would love to know about it. It can be fiction or nonfiction. If you like mysteries or history or historical fiction, whatever it is, if you like reading poetry, children's books, whatever it is, we'd love to know. We love the idea that we spread the word on good books. All right, Rose Quiello.
So, Faith, I want to preface my comments or the title of the book by saying that this book won the Pulitzer Prize and was also a New York Times bestseller book. And I say that because the title is called The Emperor of All Maladies, and it's a biography of cancer by Siddhartha Mukherjee. So why read a book about this? Well, I can tell you that it offers a panoramic history of cancer, but it is imbued with all the suspense of a mystery novel. As Mukherjee takes us through the victories, the setbacks of this incredible disease. What I love about this book are two things. The first is that he takes very complicated issues and makes them understandable to the layperson. I'm a nurse, but this is for the layperson. And secondly, what I love about this book, it is not depressing. This is a very exciting book. He is in the league of Sherwin Newlin, the late Sherwin Newlin. Mm-hmm. If you loved How We Die, that almost sounds comical, but mm-hmm. that was a fascinating book.
Yeah, it was.
If you love one of my favorite authors, Oliver Sacks, The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat.
So can I ask a question, Rose? As we have seen cancer rates go up in recent decades, we all tend to say to each other, oh, there are so many new sources and environmental things that are causing cancer in people. And because everybody has some kind of cancer or there's some new cancer. And I remember reading something and it occurred to me that it was maybe not so much those things as it's really just a cell issue, you know, that cells go haywire for a particular reason. And it's so easy to get cancer that most people seem to die of it. Now, is that on target based on your reading? I know yours is a scientific mystery in a way, but is that true about cancer?
That it's more
cells. It's really just division of cells.
Well, it
that
is
go haywire, and this is why we see everybody dying of cancer, or at least it feels that way.
It is cells that are multiplying much more rapidly than normal cells. We know that from the wonderful, the immortal life of Henrietta Lacks, whose cells just would not stop reproducing, no matter what, bubbling over around the world 17 times. But I'm not quite sure that more people are dying of cancer as much as it is we are able to identify it in ways that we were not able to do years ago. Although Mukherjee tells us cancer has been around for thousands and thousands of years, which astonished me.
Yeah.
So I think we have the ability to recognize it early, recognize the different forms of it. But it's a very complex disease.
You know, as our dear friend Joy Wilkie, who has been on this show through the years so many times, recently died. And her cancer was a cancer of undetermined origin. And that surprised me. And I talked with a doctor about this, and he said, oh, yes, that actually has been around for quite some time. And I thought, so there are still cancers where medical people don't know its source.
So it had metastasized, so they only saw the secondary or tertiary?
You see it spread,
yeah, mm-hmm.
but you don't know where it's coming
started.
From.
They're really talking about the primary site. The first thing we are always trying to identify is the primary site. Sometimes there are multiple primary sites. Three different cancers can start in three different places and move on. But the primary site is very important in terms of diagnosis and treatment. So it's hard if you can't find out where the source is
because the
whole modality of treatment depends upon the identification of that source.
And did they discuss these kinds of things in the book?
Yeah. This is a wonderful book. I know it sounds like an oxymoron, but it's The Emperor of All Maladies, A Biography of Cancer by Siddhartha Mukherjee.
Ah, okay. Lee Jacobus, what do you have? And we're at 203-776-9677. That's 203-776-WNPR. Or you can reach us on Facebook, search the Faith Middleton Show, or tweet us at FaithWNPR. We're asking you, if you have a book that you have loved, classic or one from recent times, we'd love to know what it is so we can spread the word. 203-776-9677. Lee Jacobus.
Okay, nobody's going to believe this. But the book I'm really very, very much attached to at the moment is by Roddy Doyle, the Irish writer, who is one of my very favorite writers. And his new book is called The Guts. And it's about Jimmy Rabbit, now age 47, who spends much of the beginning of this book frightened about how he can tell his parents and his wife and his children that he has colon cancer. So here's another book about cancer, but this book is a lot lighter in touch than Mukherjee's book. But the thing about Roddy Doyle, I've been reading Roddy Doyle for, 20 some odd years. He wrote the great Barrytown trilogy, which is The Commitments, The Snapper, and The Van, one of the three greatest short novels that anybody's ever going to read. A brilliant portrait of the working class Dubliner during the period before the Celtic Tiger took off. Now this book is about the period when the Celtic tiger is gone to sleep and back in his cage.
Do you love it for the history lead? Do you care about the characters?
No, the writing is just brilliant. The writing is brilliant. The characters are simply awesome. They're just, you know, if you want to get close to somebody in the working class part of Dublin, I mean, I have done that, but they aren't quite as wonderful as these characters in the way he finds characters who have such color that they're absolutely marvelous. I mean, it's just astounding. And
let me ask you a question, because one of my closest friends, who's a great, great reader, Roddy Doyle is up there with William Trevor for him.
Right.
And when I've tried to read Roddy Doyle, I get so distracted by the rhythm of the dialogue.
That's right.
How do you sort of get past that so you can or
rhythm get as in dialect?
No, it's not dialect. It's an abbreviated, very, very. If you think of Hemingway as writing punchy short sentences, this is like someone writing sentences half that long. The dialogue is often three words, and the rhythms are they're the rhythms of speech in Dublin. Although, frankly, I've heard an awful lot of speech in Dublin where the rhythms are
so
difficult I can't understand them. No, it's not challenging at all.
For me, it is.
No, it is. I mean, I hear it in my ears. I don't in my mind.
So you're used to it now, but maybe it takes a
minute. I'm used to Hungarian accents, not Irish.
Yeah, see, I have trouble with Hungarian accents.
You know what? I remember actually. When Color Purple came out, mm-hmm. Alice Walker, it took me about 5-10 pages to get used to the rhythm of the dialect.
Oh, yes.
Bluest Eye is that way also,
and
by Toni Morrison.
I got it. You know, then I was so in and so love that book. But, okay.
A lot of Toni Morrison is like that way. But, no, there is no real problem with this. Once in this book, you really get the story. And what you get
maybe
is a
for some
deep
people.
Emotion. Deep emotion about what's going on. Mm. It's Roddy Doyle's new book called The Guts.
I'm going to try it.
Diana, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the book show. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Faith. I just wanted to comment on a book that you recommended the last time I listened, and it's a classic. I'm a 44-year-old woman, never read it before, Gone with the Wind, and I want to say it was great. I am missing Rhett and Scarlet right now. I wish I could reread it. I might reread it again. So I just wanted to say how wonderful it was to have that suggestion, and it's just such a great show.
I am so glad. I thank you so, so much, and I really appreciate it. Now, how much do you read?
A lot. I do read a lot, and I'm in a book group, and my co-book groupie, as we call it, she also loves the book, and we tried to convince the other book members to read it, and another one is reading it now because she loved it. And
What else have you read recently that you liked?
What we read recently was, let me see, I'm nervous.
Yeah, no, you're doing great. This is
The one book that we read, let me try to think. I can't think of the name right now. Oh, wait, it's the one about the plague. The Year of Wonder?
Huh? No, I don't know
what
that is.
The
Year of Wonder. Okay. All right. Well, this is great. How many people are in your book club?
12.
12. Huh? How did you find it?
We are just friends from, town, basically. All of our kids go to school together.
Do you think it's deepened your friendships?
Yes, it does. Absolutely. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And so it's great.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Bye-bye. Glad you called, Diana. All right. We're going to take a short break here on the book show, and then I'm going to talk about one of the great cookbooks of the past several years. It is unbelievable, this cookbook. It's a funny place to start, but that's where I'm starting. We'll be right back here on the book show. I'm Faith Middleton, and this is a fresh edition of The Book Show. It is great to have you listening. I'm with my book show buddies, Roxanne Cody, Rose Quiello, and Lee Jacobus. Love being with them. And we would love to hear from you. If you have a new or an old book, just a book you really enjoyed and want to pass on word of that to other people, we'd love to hear. 203-776-9677. The easy way to remember it is 203-776-WNPR. Ilana, Faith Middleton and the gang, I bow to you before I go to my cookbook. What's happening?
I'm so happy to recommend this book. It's by a very undeservedly obscure Southern woman named Mary Ward Brown. I'm curious if you or your guests have ever read her.
Well, this name sounds so familiar to me. I feel as if somebody has recommended Mary Ward Brown before, but go ahead and tell me.
She has a wonderful delicacy of touch. She uses words economically and elegantly. And although one could say, I suppose, that she's in the tradition of Eudora Welty and Flannery O'Connor, she's a white woman writer from Alabama who has or had racial sensitivity. Her first book was published when she was in, I think, her late 60s, in the mid-1980s. It's called Tongues of Flame. Then she had another book of short stories that came out when she was in her mid-80s, and a memoir that came out 2 or 3 years before she died, which would have been about 2009.
And, okay, and her name again?
Mary Ward Brown. She lived all her life in southwestern Alabama. And I came across her just a few months ago looking through an old 1985, I think, Best American Short Stories, this volume edited by Updike, and her wonderful story, The Cure, was in there. And I became so enamored of her. You know, I've read everything now.
Ilana, you have made me realize where her name is from. We did a book show one day that was different from this one we're doing now, and and it was about books we've all forgotten. And I went online and came upon these sites that specialize in nothing but this. That's all you have to do is Google that question, books or that line.
Really?
Books. And that's where her name is from. So there are other people like you who just love her work. Mary Ward Brown, thank you so much, Ilana.
You are so welcome.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Call again anytime. 203-776-9677. The book I'd like to recommend is starting with a cookbook, and it came out technically last year, and it's called Otolenghi. I'll spell it for you, Otolenghi the Cookbook, because the restaurant group, really, in London is called Otolenghi, and the chef owner is Yotam Otolenghi. And he has a group of these high-end restaurants in London, Nopi and a bunch of others, and has done some other books too. This cookbook is so extraordinary. I can't tell you. I go to people's in a way for people who are very interested in food and unusual, almost Middle Eastern flavors. You go to someone's house and it's like that version of the silver palette. You know, people are cooking some dish from this book. Let me say a couple of things from the book, and you'll get the feel for this. Cauliflower and cumin fritters with a lime yogurt. There is a portobello mushroom with pearled barley and preserved lemon. There is a roast chicken with sumac, za'atar, and lemon. Now, these two spices, sumac and za'atar, are available in many, many Middle Eastern markets or markets that specialize in unusual spices. You can get them online. There is an eggplant, a sliced eggplant that's stuffed with pine nuts and raisins. I mean, the food is just unbelievable. There are some things that are complicated and other things anyone can do. You know, they basically have 4 or 5 steps to them. So, roast chicken with saffron, hazelnuts, and honey. Mm. These are, if you go to the Middle East and you try some of these things, these are the things where you come back and think, I had no idea that this was going on. And he's put it all together. No wonder people flock to his restaurants. Ottolenghi, the cookbook. Ottolenghi. Ottolenghi, the cookbook by Yotam Ottolenghi. And Sammy Tamimi, actually, is a co-author. But anyway, there you go. I am crazy about this book, and I'm certain that you can still get this. Okay, Bill, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the book show.
Hi. Listen, you're giving me one bag of candy in a candy store, but I'll pick one. I don't know. Failed Two Cities, The Stand, but here's my favorite. It's called The Glass Bead Game by Hermann Hesse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, The Glass Bead Game.
Yeah, it is. I've always been quite interested in non-rational phenomena, the occult and so forth. And this is such a brilliant, brilliant articulation of it. I play the piano, so he introduced me to Scarlatti. Anyway, it's a wonderful, wonderful book. It's a classic, of course.
Yeah, it's a great book. And he introduced you to Scarlatti, but remember, Richard Strauss took his work and put it into the Four Last Songs. and you listen to the Four Last Songs, and three of those are his texts. And they're stunningly beautiful.
All right.
And Glass Bead Game, and then you should read Siddhartha if you haven't already read that.
Yes,
Siddhartha is another book in that very genre, and it affected thousands and thousands of young people in the 70s, and still does.
In fact, there's another one about a young man. It's earlier Hesse, about a young man whose parents he's in Switzerland, and his parents say, "You're going to be a doctor." And he goes through this whole thing, and then eventually takes his own life. I can't remember.
Narcissus and Goldman.
Yes, that's it. Hmm. So I'm a big Hesse fan.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Glad you called. Call anytime. It sounds like you've got a good list going. Okay, thanks. 203-776-9677, Roxanne Cody.
Bill talking about Hermann, I call him Hermann Hesse. He called him Hesse. I'm not sure the right way to say it. But so I think of Hermann Hesse's books as books that were defining for me at that time. Same what you're talking about.
Yep.
And I've always been a little curious about how they would strike me if I reread it. But I thought about this last week because Gabriel Marquez died. And I consider 100 Years of Solitude, I put it in my list of top 10. But I realized when I thought about it that I have no idea what the plot to 100 Years of Solitude is.
No.
I don't remember the characters. So I did two things, or three. One is I took all my Gabriel Marquez books off the shelf because I, of course, did move them to my new place. And so one thing happened. I opened up Love in the Time of Cholera, which I still think stands as one of the most wonderful love stories, albeit unrequited love. And before I opened the bookstore, I used to make notes in the front of books like a diary. Somebody asked me recently, do I shelve them chronologically, given that I use them as a diary? And it said, how wonderful to read of love and think of Kevin, my husband, and the baby I am carrying about to open the bookstore. And it was 12/31/89. So I must have finished it on New Year's Eve, which shows you about my social life. And Faith, you were there. And so just thinking about what books evoke for you.
Yeah.
So then I started looking at 100 Years of Solitude and realized I want to reread this. And because I like people around me, I sent out an email saying, he died. I want to reread this book. Do you want to reread this book? And then we'll hold a book discussion in the store. And dozens of people responded.
And how'd you feel? Where are you in the book? Are you?
I haven't started reading it, but because that to me is a book that I hold as a pinnacle of a book that mattered a lot to me. So I'm going to recommend it for people who either want to reread it or never read it, and I'm so curious.
Okay, great. Susan Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the book show. Hi, Susan, are you there?
Hello.
Hi. Oh, okay, I thought it was... Yes, go ahead.
Go ahead. My name is Susan Alone. I have the bookstore Miriam Green in Clinton. And I would like to return us to a very brilliant author, musician, who died many years ago by the name of Oscar Levant. Oh, I became obsessed with him about 6 months ago, read his three books, and just finished a 600-page biography, which I recommend to everybody, called Talent for Genius. This man spanned the Roaring Twenties, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. He was one of the most important concert pianists, but he had terrible drug problems. He was Gershwin's best friend and the most applauded interpreter of his music.
Huh.
The biography goes, and also he was the youngest member of the Algonquin Round Table, so he spans that part too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oscar Levant is just somebody that once you get your teeth into him, you can't put him down. Hmm. He is the most amazing wit.
Oh, now I'm intrigued. Thank you so much for calling about that, Susan.
And his recording of Gershwin's Preludes is one of the most brilliant of all possible
and
recordings.
And his first recording of the Rhapsody in Blue
and the
was
Rhapsody
done,
in Blue, yes, absolutely.
Was done when somebody failed to show up.
That's amazing.
What a fascinating thing.
I have that recording.
He had such obsessive compulsive disorders that he had terrors for going on stage for concert pianizing. So it was a terrible, terrible strain for him. And the other part about it is just all of the people, I mean, from Charlie Chaplin, there isn't anybody. And they all lived eventually in California on North Roxbury Drive. James Stewart, Ira Gershwin, everybody, they knew each other. They were so close.
What a block. Wow, thank you.
And
thank you so
just
much, Susan.
I want to tell Oscar Levant, please,
wonderful.
If you want something you can dig your teeth into, this is a person that represents last century.
Thank you. Really, thank you so much.
And I appreciate your program. And hi, Roxanne.
Hi, Susan.
Okay,
come and visit me.
Bye-bye. 203-776-9677 is our number. So I would like to, because we've been talking a lot about people who have died, and so I can say this briefly, because Rose mentioned it. I would recommend, I can say this briefly because I can't say it more, because I don't think I'll get through it, but I wanted to say Sherwin Newland, if any of his books, I would recommend. One of my dearest friends and one of the greatest people walking the planet. Just amazing. An extraordinary loss, and yet how beautiful. I would say to his family, what a beautiful legacy that this man has left through his work.
And
so,
brave.
Oh, so
and brave in
such
his
a
writing.
Brave person.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So Dr. Sherwin Newland, one of a group of writing surgeons who've always fascinated me, but he in particular was so extraordinary.
Especially his memoir about his father. I have read it a couple of times. I've sent it to many people. Just a courageous, honest look at his life and his background.
Yes. Okay. Ellen Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. I wanted to address the concern that some of you were expressing earlier about the challenge of reading books with a lot of dialect in them.
Yeah.
Because I have the same problem. I get so distracted by the dialect that I just lose the thread. But I started listening to audiobooks. And when you have someone reading an audiobook who's so good at the dialect, it just transforms the whole novel. I listen to Huck Finn that way.
Ellen,
so much dialect in Huck Finn.
Ellen,
I had such a different experience with that book as an audiobook. audiobook.
Well, Ellen,
so
let me
to bring that up.
Let me mention this to you, because you've keyed into something that happened during our break. We were taking the station break we always take, which lasts about 90 seconds, and because we'd had this debate, I said to Lee, read me the first few lines of the Roddy Doyle book so I could get a feel for this. And two things happened. One, I understood Lee and Roxanne at the same time, because I thought, oh, if Lee read it to me in his wonderful Irish accent and it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then Roxanne, I understood from what you were saying, because I thought to myself, if reading that without Lee,
right.
Lee's accent, and the fact that that kind of short theater-like dialogue with the Irish dialect is going on for so many pages before you have any context, that would be challenging to me. So I see, Ellen, what a great idea it is to for something like this to have an audio book at your disposal. I wonder who reads it, Lee, as an audio book.
Well, I don't know.
An audio book I just finished yesterday, and I'm in deep mourning because I'm missing it so much. Again, it had dialect in it, but it's called The Highland Witch. It's by Susan Fletcher. It's a historical novel about a massacre that took place under King William's reign in the late 1600s in Scotland. But, again, a lot of dialect, but just a beautifully written book. And so I'm just throwing that out as another recommendation, a good book group.
Thank you so much for calling. It was terrific remarks. Thank you very much.
Sure, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. 203-776-9677 here on The Book Show. If you are listening and thought, oh, I have to remember a particular book, if you go to our website, you will see the books recommended by my studio buddies here at WNPR.org, and lots of recipes too. WNPR.org. Click Programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and we will be right back with more recommendations. I'm Faith Middleton. Thank you so much for listening to the show. And I wanted to let you know, I hope you will save the date. And that date is Thursday, June 19th. You are invited to attend and be a top judge at the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze Martini Competition. CPTV will be there to film. And you run around and taste at all the cocktail stations. You run around and eat at all the food stations. And it is a remarkable sight. Everybody has a ballot and you vote. And the winner by numbers of ballots ends up being crowned the king or queen of the Food Schmooze Martini Competition, is then celebrated in Connecticut Magazine. It is an amazing experience. We have an all-out hot DJ. We're told that some of the hotels all around the event, Riverview and Simsbury, have already begun to come near selling out, because people are either renting limos together, they are staying over in the hotel so they can really have a good time. We urge you to drink responsibly. Their tickets are $65 each to benefit WNPR and CPTV. And go online to ctmartini.org for tickets and information. It is the party of the summer. It is Thursday, June 19th, the start of the weekend. ctmartini.org. We continue with The Book Show, and I am with Roxanne Cody and Rose Criello and Lee Jacobus, our book buddies, our regulars on the show, senior people on this show. I mean that in the best way. Anita Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Anita from Durham. And I have an audiobook that I'm almost finished. It's 1493 by Charles Mann. And it's almost the complete history of humans, globalization since Columbus, and how we got earthworms up northeast to disease. And it's just an amazing book and written.
I love it.
You love this
really
book?
Love it. I love it because every day I'm reading it, I think about something else today. about our life today and how it relates to back then.
I also read it, quote unquote, on audio.
Yes.
And it was just fascinating. You know, it's not a very long book, but I don't. Who was the author again? I've forgotten.
Charles Mann.
It was fascinating.
It's fascinating, and the brutality that was done in, you know, South America and U.S. with Indians, whatever. But to hear the news every single day, what's going on in Nigeria with the kidnapping of the 200 young high school women.
Yes.
And the only difference that I can see, and I know it sounds depressing, is that, oh, well, now we have media, and people know more about the our world.
Thank
but
you.
It hasn't changed. Nothing's changed.
Nope.
So 1493. Thank you so much.
1393.
Sorry. Thank you.
No.
1493. Okay. Thank you so much, okay. Anita. Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye. Rose Cuello.
Faith, sometimes I think life is too short to reread novels, except when it comes to Gabriel Garcia Marquez or the author I'm about to talk about, Nadine Gordimer. I just revisited The House Gun, a book that I had read many years ago. And we know about Nadine Gordimer that for her, the personal is always the political. And so this is a story about this upper-class white family in South Africa whose grown son, admits on the first page of the novel that he committed a murder. And so it's hardly a detective story because we know the outcome. But what I really love about Nadine Gordimer in all of her books is her ability to shift almost effortlessly from the intimacy of the tragedy of the family to the tragedy of the political situation in South Africa and back. So in a way, this is a wonderful parable about reconciliation for the country, for the family. And I really, it is a page turner, though, even though we know the outcome. And something that I just found out about Nadine Gordimer was that she helped Nelson Mandela write his I Am Prepared to Die speech, which I thought was great.
And I never knew that.
Yeah, neither did I. Oh. And it's Nadine Gordimer's The House Gun.
Mm, thank you, Rose. Liz, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the book show.
Hi. This is Liz. I'm from East Berlin. And I am currently about halfway through Francis May's Every Day in Tuscany, Seasons of an Italian Life.
Ah, yes.
I would read a menu if this lady wrote it. She just turns the word, and you can smell the smell she's talking about, and you can taste the food she's writing about, and you can feel the sense of family as she talks about the people in Cortona and being an expat and how she now has been there for so long that she's not really, she's a resident. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there's just, I think this book and her other ones about Tuscany have always made me feel like I probably must have lived there in a past life.
Yeah, isn't that something?
That's where I'm going to live in a future life.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. At least
I
a vacation. Yeah. Thank you so much, Liz. Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
Calling.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Bye-bye. Lee Jacobus?
Yes, I want to speak just very quickly about a really nice short book that I very much enjoyed. It's Jane Smiley's biography of Charles Dickens. Now, I just don't have the patience, I'm afraid to say, to read one of those gigantic biographies of 19th century British novelists that start at the cradle. And
you
then,
don't?
I don't. No, it's terrible, but I just
oh,
don't.
Oh, you've gotten old, Lee.
I know. I'm worn out. This is a much...
Or he's lying.
This is a much briefer and much more...
He's trying to seem of the people.
Yeah. He's trying to come down in the mud with us.
No, this is great. She talks about his books and she talks about connections between his life and his books. One of the things she says that's wonderful is that he spent an enormous amount of his time putting on theatricals. And yet, as Simon Callow, who is actually doing a worldwide tour doing Charles Dickens, Simon Callow points out he never could write a single decent play. And he didn't. That's really true. But he loved to dress up. He loved to write out scripts and put people on stage. And he was doing all this while he's writing these incredible, know, novels, one after
and
another.
And had 10 kids.
And had kids. And then, of course, he gets to a point in his life where his family is just not pleasing him anymore, and he runs off, or let's say he takes off, so to speak. He doesn't really run off.
With
Ellen Ternan. And nobody really knows. You know, everybody wants to pussyfoot around their relationship. But he went to Italy with her. He did all kinds of wonderful things with her, and was with her for years and years and years when he had abandoned his wife. My presumption is that they
and
had something
children?
Going.
Did he abandon
well,
his
he
children?
Didn't abandon them in the sense that no, he stayed in touch with them all. He didn't turn his
sort of.
He didn't
sort
need
of.
He didn't need his wife is really what it amounted to. He just was unsatisfied with her.
There was a biography that came out about her a couple of years ago. It was pretty interesting. And I would say there's not a lot of debate about their relationship.
Well, Claire Tomlin wrote about it. And maybe is that possibly the biography you're thinking of? She wrote about
yes.
it, too.
Can I add on this, Lee, that this is another – Charles Dickens is one of my favorite authors in my
too.
Life.
Yeah.
However, I have, you know, the complete set of Dickens. Mm. And every once in a while, you know, there are some that I have not read. And here's the reason. There are some of his novels where I will pick one up and say, oh, now, what am I thinking? I haven't read this by Dickens. And I open it up, and the first few pages are in that dialect.
I know. That's very true.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah. Yes. Well, so some of the more
I'm going to go back and look.
More obscure ones of his, as if they're obscure, but you know what I mean. The lesser known ones.
That's true.
Make me feel that way.
In fact, as a child, that really turned me off to Dickens, and so I never really got involved in Dickens until later life.
I have to power through that.
You have to.
Okay. So
anyway, it's Jane Smiley's short biography of Charles Dickens, a relatively recent book.
Great. Thank you. Charity, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the show.
Hi. I would like to recommend the new book by Sarah Dunant.
Okay.
Dunant. It's called Blood and Beauty.
Before you even say a word, I love her. I have loved her past
book. And she's got a brand new book out about the 15th century Italian Borgias. I think everybody got really interested in that from the Jeremy Irons drama on HBO that was done.
Oh.
And I can include myself among those.
Yeah.
So her book is really good. And in conjunction with that, there's a new book called The Borgias, The Hidden History by G.J. Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R. And it is utterly fascinating. It takes into question everything that was ever previously said about the Borgias.
Is it Dunant? Is that how you pronounce her name? Sarah.
Say it again.
How do you pronounce Sarah? Is it Dunant?
I pronounce it Dunant.
Dunant.
D-U-N-A-N-T. That
okay.
That could be wrong. It's
well,
called Blood and Beauty.
That's what I wanted, the title again, Blood and Beauty. Wonderful. Thank you so much for that.
And then The Borgias, The Hidden History by G.J. Meyer. You will absolutely want to read that afterwards.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And I'm going to jump in and talk about a book that is just about to come out. That would be Wonderland, a novel by Stacy DeRasmo, who's been on the show a few times. In the past for novels that she's done. And this is the story of Anna Brundage, who is a rock star and falls apart out there on the circuit and then is a mess and then tries to the comeback. And so this is the story of someone age 44 who's trying to recapture the past and go forward at the same time. So it is... you know, I think really about whether you can live with, the avatar, a version of yourself that you've hung on to and want to bring alive again. So I'm just starting to get into this book, Wonderland by Stacy DeRasmo. Andy, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the book show.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, Andy.
Hi. Well, the first thing I want to get a suggestion, but the first thing I was going to say is I would really recommend, you guys were talking about short stories a while ago, and there's a short story by James Baldwin. It's called Sonny's Blues.
Oh, yeah.
I would really recommend it. It's probably about 20 pages or something, but it's one of the best short stories I think I've ever read.
Oh, that's
great,
good
great,
to hear.
It's a great story, you're right.
Oh, yep. Thank you. Thank you so much, Andy.
Oh, can I ask some advice, though?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I need I can't find it anywhere, and I'm trying to find an audio version of The Magic Mountain by Thomas Mann.
Oh.
Very long book. I tried reading it. I can't get through it, and I can't find it. I don't know. It sounds like they didn't make it, but is there any suggestions?
Try Powells.com.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So they're sending you to Powells.com. P-O-W-E-L-L, apostrophe S, Powells.com.
P-O-W-E-L-L-S?
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Powells.com, and see if anybody's going to have it, they might.
Yeah, they're a West Coast outfit, and I don't know of a recording. I've read the book several times, but...
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay.
All righty. So I want to let you know that our very own Lee Jacobus is reading tonight from his new book, Hawaiian Tales, The Girl with Heavenly Eyes, and talking about short stories that are linked, and that's tonight at 7 at the Willoughby Wallace Library in Stony Creek. And then Lee also reads on Tuesday, May 6th at the New Haven Free Public Library. I love that the New Haven Library has the word free in its title. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Lee, and I hope it goes well. I know you've been enjoying your tour and conversations with people. I love when authors get to hear, you know, it's a two-way thing suddenly.
Yeah.
Which can be for good and for bad. Carolyn, excuse me, Carolyn, hold on one second. Roxanne Cody, as quickly as you can you name something?
Here's a book coming out next Tuesday called All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr from Scribner's. Oh. It is brilliant.
Yeah,
I'll talk about it more next time.
Yeah,
epic and perfect.
Oh, I just read a review.
And wonderful.
It was just a four-star review.
I love it.
Okay, Carolyn, quickly, what do you have?
Very quick. It's a long book, The Great Epidemic by John Barry, about the influenza epidemic in 1918. Fascinating about the development of medical education and medical care, but also about how World War I and politics came together to really influence the fact that there were more mortalities than there should have been.
The Great Epidemic.
Yeah, that is about the 1918 influenza epidemic.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Good
Thank
to
you.
Hear from you. You're welcome. Wanted to let you know that Maggie Shipstead has come out with a new novel called Astonish Me. And this is the same person who did Seating Arrangements. And that won the Dylan Thomas Prize and the Los Angeles Times Book Prize for first fiction. And this has gotten really quite good reviews. It's all the suspects are in here, you know, love and loss and betrayal and secrecy and artistic ambition. Astonish Me by Maggie Shipstead. This is a story about a woman named Joan, who's an American dancer, helps a Soviet ballet star defect in 1975, and they have a relationship. On and on it goes. You know, it's one of those sweeping things, and I love those, so I can't wait to get to this. Roxanne?
Oh, I thought we were out of time. So here's another book by another person who sadly died, Peter Matheson.
Oh, yeah.
And I had just finished reading his new book, In Paradise, which I'll talk about next time. It is phenomenal.
Well,
eerie, phenomenal, mm-hmm. Sad.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Jack, quickly, can you quickly mention, we have about a minute left. Do you want to say your title and author?
Yeah, I'm Jack Nissan Porter from Newton, Mass. I'm stuck in traffic here in Hartford. I'm an author myself, by the way.
Jack, do you want to say the name of the book you recommend and the author?
Yeah, a short biography of Pete Seeger by a New Yorker.
Yes.
I forget his name, but... It's a short, sweet little biography of Seeger.
Yes, and Jack, thank you, I'm so out of time. It got a great review. I'm so glad you mentioned that. Thanks, and call anytime when you're traveling, Jack. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye. Thank you to all my book buddies. As always, this show is about the richness of life. You can go online to find recipes and the books that we mention on the show at WNPR.org. Click on Programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Working on my rearrange.